Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Moderate Republican New Jersey Governor Chris Christie won re-election in a landslide. In the Virginia governor's race, conservative Republican Ken Cuccinelli likewise lost. Some have asked whether these are indications that the sway of conservative Tea Party-aligned groups has weakened, run its course. Former Ohio Congressman Stephen LaTourette doesn't appear to be taking any chances. His group, Main Street Advocacy, has launched a campaign to raise money to help moderate Republican candidates. They released an ad that depicts several unsuccessful Tea Party-backed candidates, including Todd Akin, Christine O'Donnell, and Richard Murdoch. Let's listen.
It's only the special few who enter the Senate Candidates Hall of Shame.
And I think even when life begins in that horrible situation of rape, that it is something that God intended to happen.
If it's a legitimate rape, the female body has ways to try to shut that whole thing down.
I'm not a witch.
What were they thinking? The time to act is now. Help us fight to protect Main Street.
Today we'll talk about Main Street and moderate Republicans and whether the latter has a future in the former. Joining us in the studio, political scientist Paul Beck, now retired from Ohio State. Welcome back to the show.
Good to be here, Ann.
So what traits or what is a moderate modern Republican, I guess, in 2013? How does a moderate today compare with, say, 25 or 30 years ago?
Well, if you go back to half a century ago, there really was a large group within the Republican Party who would call themselves moderate Republicans. They were business Republicans in the 50s, Eisenhower Republicans. One of my colleagues here in history at Ohio State has written a book called Moderate Republicanism. So it was very well established.
And what
there.
Was it like back then? What did they mean then?
Well, I think they meant that they were people who had basically settled with the New Deal.
Okay.
And the Democratic legislation that came to pass in the 1930s. They were willing to accept the welfare state. They were more conservative about it. They didn't want to spend large amounts of money. They worried about what the welfare state would do to people's willingness to work and, you know, a whole variety of things of that sort. But they basically had bought into the kinds of changes that had occurred in the 1930s. That group has dwindled over time. Conservative ideology and partisanship, Republican partisanship, has become much more aligned over time. In the 2000s and, you know, all the way to today, people who are conservative are almost all Republicans. People who are liberal to moderate are almost all Democrats or independents. That's been a big, big change over time. On the national stage, by the way, what we see happening there is the bringing of the South into the kind of the modern era, whereas the South all the way through the 1950s into the 1960s,
including Virginia, was
an incredibly Democratic era. Mm-hmm. Everybody was a Democrat by and large, conservatives, liberals, moderates, and so forth. That's no longer the same. And half of the Republican Party in the Congress is from the South. And so what we're seeing is kind of a Southernization of Republican Party politics in a way that it never was prior to certainly the 1960s and beyond.
If you're just joining us, this is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about the definition of the moderate Republican going back in time and looking ahead with Paul Beck, political scientist from OSU. The moderate Republican, then, let's go back 25 years. There were moderate Republicans. I know there were. I covered the state legislature. There were conservative Republicans. There were moderates. What was going on back 25 years ago?
Well, I think what's happened over time is that the moderate Republicans are exposed in two ways. One is with the birth and the growth of the Tea Party movement, they get attacked by people who are more conservative than they are. They get attacked and challenged in the primary. Some of them lose. You've cited some examples when you use the Steve LaTourette comments. Mm-hmm. So that's been happening within the party. The other thing that I think has been happening with the Tea Party is that it drives everybody farther to the right within the Republican Party. Certainly elected officials, they're worried about a contested primary.
Does the landscape of Republicanism in the United States today reflect the larger society?
I think it does, although the interesting thing about the Republican Party, if you think of people who identify as Republicans, that percentage of the American electorate simply has not grown at all in the last 50 years. Up a little bit in the Reagan years, down a little bit recently. It comes in at about 25% of the public. So the answer is no, it doesn't reflect the general population, nor do the Democrats necessarily reflect the general population. To be able to win general elections, they've got to effectively contest that middle ground. And that middle ground is made up of people who don't live and die politics, who are much more moderate in a sense. Ideologically, they would put themselves in the middle of any kind of continuum you would have from liberal to conservative. Republicans more and more are towards the right side of that continuum, although the big difference, by the way, between Tea Party supporters and non-Tea Party supporters within the Republican Party, and they divide almost evenly these days, is that the Tea Party supporters are much more extreme in their conservatism than the non-Tea Party Republicans. And they also differ in style. The Tea Party Republicans are sort of a take-no-prisoners group. They demand purity. Now, they can demand purity because they themselves are more ideological. So they're demanding purity of people, elected officials, who don't necessarily think that way, who may be more problem-oriented, more desirous of coming up with some kind of compromise solution that fixes the problems they see out there, whereas the Tea Party people tend to be much more adamant about sticking to principles, and these are very conservative principles.
Were there precursors to the Tea Party? In other words, back in the 90s, in Ohio at least, the party became more conservative and more driven by social conservative issues versus, say, the economy and fiscal issues. That's when a lot of the early abortion control laws went into effect. Can you talk about that? How did that happen? What was that? Where was that coming from?
Well, two things here. One is that there was always a very conservative wing of the Republican Party. And you go back to the struggles between Bob Taft in Ohio and Eisenhower over the nomination in 1952. So it was always there. What becomes new, beginning in the 1980s and moving into the 1990s, is the surge of social conservatism, driven by Christian conservatives largely. A different set of values come onto the political stage. Those issues of religion really weren't there in Republican or general politics before that. And so that's new. And what I think scholars who study that would tell us is that it's easier to compromise economic differences than it is to compromise religious value differences. You can't take a middle position easily on abortion, for example, though most Americans do, by the way, but it's harder to do that. Whereas on economic issues, you can say, well, okay, we're debating the minimum wage. We're not really happy about doing that if we're a conservative Republican. So let's move it up to $8 rather than $10. And you could have a compromise worked out on that where both sides sort of get part of what they want, but not all of what they want. When you come to these value issues, particularly religious-based value issues, it's very, very difficult to find a coherent middle that people at either extreme are willing to at least settle for.
Another big change in the 90s was term limits, at least at the state level. To what extent did that play a role in changing the face of the Republican Party?
I'm not sure how much of a role it played. What it did was it elected politicians who weren't going to be there for a long time, and so they wanted quick settlements. We talk about this in the business world, where businesses were focused on quarterly profits rather than the long term, and I think that's happened in politics as well. The other thing is that when you have term limits, by the time people get into their second and third term, they're looking beyond. They may be looking to running for another office. They may be trying to line up some kind of business opportunities for themselves. And so it diverts their attention from legislative business and focuses it more on their careers, in effect. So I think that's been a problem. But it may be a problem that's kind of independent of the demise of moderate Republicanism. One thing that I think has pushed moderate Republicanism more to the side is the gerrymandering of legislative districts, certainly in Ohio, not all states, but in Ohio, it's there. It means that people, Republicans in this case, are much more concerned with heading off any kind of primary competition, having to spend money in competing in a primary. And again, it pushes them a little bit more in a conservative direction, particularly when there are large numbers of activists who are pushing them very hard from the right.
I want to bring in another guest now. Joining us as well is Neil Clark. He's a veteran Republican in politics, in Ohio, including we were the post of chief operating officer of the Ohio Senate back in the 80s, some 27 years ago, when it was led by moderate Republicans. He is a longtime lobbyist as well, now president of Grant Street Consultants. Welcome to the show, Neil.
Thank you very much.
So talk about gerrymandering a bit, because you had a hand in that over the years, at least in terms of the districting or redistricting for election purposes. To what extent has that had a role in it, and why did it begin to have a role in it? Even we did redistricting forever.
Some of the common concepts about lines, as you look at legislative lines or the apportionment board, which is made up of five individuals, principally looked at how the state was going to be cut up for legislative districts. Oftentimes, the party that was in control determined who was going to have what kind of lines and what it would look like.
Because they controlled that five-person board.
Because they controlled that board. And so, as a result, you would see cases which lines probably didn't seem to be rational and realistic. Over time, they would go to court. It'd be challenged by the opposition party. And sometimes those things would be changed. In the congressional, that was done by a legislative vote. The Ohio General Assembly votes on that particular item. Usually in the past, in my 33 years and the three that I have seen, two were done by legislative leadership saying, these are what the line should be without any input from the congressional members. This last time, the congressional members virtually wrote their own lines, which I think changes the whole concept of what we're actually doing at the State House.
Why last time was that change made?
Well, because John Boehner's Speaker of the U.S. House, and he's from Ohio, and I think he made that personal request. But also what's happening in this process, because of term limits, the historical memory is no longer there. And so the rules are being rewritten, and the process of how we do things are having very little to do with a system of a decorum, if you will, or a process in which we have a certain respect for the party that is not in power.
We are talking about the moderate Republican, whether it's a fossil or a part of the future of the Republican Party and the national political face. If you have a question or comment, what do you think a moderate Republican is in 2013? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the definition and role of moderate Republicans in the future of the GOP in American politics. Last week, former Ohio Republican Congressman Steve LaTourette threw down something of a gauntlet with a new campaign to raise money to help moderate Republican candidates. Will his efforts stack up to the powers that be behind the conservative wing of the party? Still with us is OSU political scientist Paul Beck. Paul, once again, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Ann.
And Neil Clark, a veteran of Republican politics in Ohio and president of the lobbying group Grant Street Consultants. Neil, once again, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Ann.
So for a long time, Republicans haven't just controlled the Ohio General Assembly. They've squashed the Democrats in Ohio, and Republicans for most of the last two decades have dominated every statewide elected executive office in Ohio. Does that breed or hinder polarization in the larger political landscape, Neil?
Of course it does. You know, when you look at the Ohio Senate first took control in 1980, They went into the minority in 1982 as a result of some very turbulent times in the economy and probably not making the right decisions at the right moment. They regained that control in 1984 and now will be approaching 30 years of dominant control. During that time, the House has certainly flipped, and as you've said, statewide offices have changed. Why have they changed? Well, I think they've changed for a number of reasons, is that the message that the Republicans have had has usually been a lot better than what the Democrats are putting out. And when you look at how individuals have succeeded, even in during that time of dominance, those that were too far to the right, Ken Blackwell, were severely defeated by Ted Strickland. It wasn't even a close call. So the public does have its own radar to say too much. And so what we see here now is certain individuals who have the ability to win primaries, win the primaries, and they maintain themselves in a pretty strong position.
How much does it differ as far as what the public understands about who they're voting for when you're voting at a statewide level and when you're voting for the local guy, you know, for the state legislature or even Congress?
First of all, let's figure out why people are upset. You know, after going through a tough recession, we're still trying to rebuild the Ohio economy. We're sitting at around a 7% unemployment. We may be at a position that full employment in Ohio may be at 6.5%, which would be unheard of 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. What we're looking at is that people had to focus about taking care of their own families. And they're really getting tired of listening to people that have a 10% approval rating or people that have a 20% approval rating, Congress or Tea Party. And they're saying, I don't have time for you. Okay, I'm tired of the ugly commercials. I'm tired of what's happening here. I want to see real results. People want, as Jim Rhodes said years ago, he would use his wallet from his back pocket.
Former Ohio governor.
And just say, hold it up in front of the group and say, you know what you're supposed to be doing out there? Protecting their wallet. All people care about is what goes in that wallet and what comes out of that wallet. And we have to spend more time thinking about how we're taking care of our kids, how we're taking care of our families, how we're taking care of making sure they get educated. Kids are coming out of college with $100,000 debt, and they can't pay for it because they can't get a great-paying job. We've got to change how we're doing things, and it's not about doing it from the far right. It's about doing it at the family level, making them get more involved in politics and understanding that they can change it. They think it's a rigged system right now. Most families think it's rigged.
I agree with what Neil has said. I think that voters generally are very discouraged about the present day. When they're asked the question, are things better today or worse than they were before, there's a tendency to say worse. They're concerned. They're concerned that they can't pass on an improved life for their children. And I think that then reverberates through our politics. And there will be people who will attack the president or the powers that be in Washington from the right and the left on this issue. Voters, I think, have trouble sorting all of this out. Groups like the Tea Party or some groups maybe on the Democratic left try to help them to sort it out, but they help them by being very shrill and by being very extreme in their views. And I think most voters, as Neil has put it, don't want to hear that. What they want to hear are, what are the solutions to this problem?
Yeah, we talk about that all the time. I've had lots of shows, and I've been reporting on it for years, what people want to hear. But what seems to work when it comes to election time is negative campaigning.
Let's go.
You know
let's,
that.
Oh, no, I do know that. We call it comparative.
Right.
In reality, let's take a look at a situation of a person who started from the far right, John Kasich. Let's say that John Kasich, when he got elected—
Far right in his day.
And even as he got elected governor. Okay. But see, he's learned real quick, and it's being reflective in the polls. The polls are saying today that people, for the first time in 10 years, believe the state's moving in the right direction. Okay, and he, of course, has made the Tea Party mad because of things that he's done, because it's not all the way to the right. Medicaid expansion helps a lot of people. And so what John Kasich, our governor, has done has gone to the middle, and he's operating from the middle, moving to the left and to the right. I'll bet you, as you see these new poll numbers coming out for him, they're going to skyrocket because he is operating from the middle. Until people realize that you can only operate from the middle, I think you're going to struggle.
Now, some of the Tea Party folks have said they will not support John Kasich no matter what, and everybody they know, they'll say, don't vote for him. Mm-hmm. Can John Kasich, is he can afford a split like that?
I actually think unless what's interesting about numbers, I've done a lot of research on gubernatorial numbers, and with the supercell of Cuyahoga County and Franklin County dominating Democrat politics, that they account for about 150,000 surplus Democrat votes beginning Election Day. And it's the rest of the state that makes it a narrow victory for a Republican. Unless Ed Fitzgerald catches on fire in Cleveland and actually starts to motivate people to vote for him, John Kasich will win by a large margin.
No matter what.
And he won't need the Tea Party because he's moved to the middle and he'll pick up the people that care about the cost of tuition. The total package that John Kasich has done of tax cuts and money for education and other things are going to be evaluated by the working family and saying, I may not like how he says things sometimes, but I like the end result.
Let me add two things to this. One is you have to think about the district in which they're running. And John Kasich is running statewide, whereas that there are a lot of members of Congress who are running in very lopsided districts, pro-Democratic and pro-Republican.
Well, a la the gerrymandering process.
Exactly. The most Republican district in Ohio is John Boehner's district. The most Democratic district in Ohio is the Cleveland district that's electing a Democrat. Those are two politicians who don't really have to worry much about competition from the other party, and there are a lot of them of that type. The other thing I wanted to add is that in the end, even though if you go back to the 2012 election, even though there was a lot of dissatisfaction among Tea Party people about their nominee Mitt Romney, they ended up voting for him. And so I think that what will happen for many of the people who are on the extreme conservative side of the continuum, they will look at the alternatives. They will see that John Kasich, their Republican candidate, is much better than the competition on most things and will end up voting for him. Now, there will be some who are so offended by what's happened with Medicaid and maybe a few other things that Governor Kasich has done, who will either sit it out or end up voting for the Libertarian candidate if there is one on the ballot. And I think that's probably a worry for people in the Republican Party who are supportive of Governor Kasich. They do worry about somebody else on the ballot siphoning some votes.
That's always if there's something else.
That's always a possibility there. So I think there is that kind of concern.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Neil Clark?
What's interesting is that, as the doctor has said, you're running in the district that is for your election. And for statewides, it is the complete state. This is a 50-50 state. There's no doubt about how this state falls. And so it would be to the best interest of the governor to run from the middle. What's also interesting is that he can only be beaten by a candidate, and the Democrats have to put up a candidate that can win.
Oh, that same old problem.
That same old problem.
We have a Facebook message from Kent that I think will bring up something we were talking about off the air before the program started. He asks, why do we place so much emphasis on moderates? Personally, I like to see firm stances on issues. Maybe the principled Republicans should empower the Libertarian Party and leave the moderates behind. So what's the value of being a moderate? Why not be somebody firmly ensconced in a certain—
Read what you just said again. Leave them behind. You're talking about a 12% body saying leave the other 88% behind. Do you understand what you just read? That is fundamentally the problem, is that we, as moderates, have not been fighting back. Steve LaTourette's fighting back. Neil Clark will fight back. Moderates will band together, and all of a sudden, we won't be left behind. We will not be left behind and ignored.
When did who started the RINO thing, the Republican in name only movement? Was that in concert with the Tea Party, the rise of the Tea Party now? It seems like it predated it a little bit.
It predated it.
And how effective was that tactic that seemed to start to pull people apart?
Well, I think as politics became more ideological, it became harder for people in the middle to justify their positions, maybe is the way to put it. I think moderates, and Neil makes a really good point, I think moderates were not well organized in the past. I think they now have their backs up, maybe the way to put it. The Republican Party, in terms of people who just identify as Republicans, is divided almost equally these days between moderates and very conservative Republicans. The very conservative group is actually shrinking in size. The Tea Party's become less popular over time. And so I think we're going to see in 2014 and beyond more warfare within the party over not so much moderation, but extremism.
I want to bring on a listener, Evan in Dublin. Oh. He just hung up. He he's a former Tea Party member. Who are the former Tea Party members, Neil? Are they someone that you're going to be able to bring into the moderate ranks, or are they just the conservative wing of the party?
Disenchanted individuals tired of watching the same old, same old. Let's talk about who we are as moderates. We are the people who have been doing races for 30, 40 years. We are the people who have been the strategists, who have sat and helped others get there. Steve LaTourette was a very successful congressman. Okay, I've been pretty successful in the things I've done. There's many like me that will come out there and use our services and use our way of doing races and actually make this more competitive. And when we start doing that, businesses and others will actually contribute to us and say, put an end to it. The same thing that happened in New Jersey. A businessman said, enough is enough, and actually countered the move of the far right. That day's coming. That day's coming as long as the moderates can put up a spokesperson who will fight the fight. There will be an army.
Steve LaTourette wants to raise, what is it, $8 million? Correct me if I'm wrong. How does that stack up against, say, the Koch brothers, who have unlimited money to put toward conservative candidates?
Bit by bit. Okay. Inch by inch. Day by day. You know, one of the hardest things that you have to learn in races is the territory you get each day. It's never such a silver bullet that wins the race. It's always the hard work. They can be beaten if a member is willing to go door to door, if a member is willing to go and meet the public, because the public, given choices of having them speak at their door or having you speak at the door, you'll probably easily defeat them.
So what happened to the moderates then? Did they get lazy?
I think they were preoccupied with taking care of the things that were in front of them, that there were so many other things that are happening, and leadership was too strong at that particular time, and they weren't moving through the process. Guys that did, that were moderates, Dave Hobson, Stan Aronoff, they all moved on. Paul Gilmore moved on. People went other places, and so there wasn't a farm team for it.
But some left Congress, particularly because they couldn't stand the environment anymore. Paul Beck?
Yeah, I'd like to make a distinction between the politics and responsibilities for governing and the politics of position taking.
Okay.
And I think we've seen that in recent years, that the moderate Republicans, what characterized them most was that they did indeed take responsibility for governing, for working things out. Whereas I think the emergence of the Tea Party movement in the early days certainly was position taking, moved away from a responsibility for governing. I think people are going to get drawn back into that because the country does face problems that require bipartisan solutions, each party covering for the other in making really hard decisions and trying to persuade the public that those are the right decisions.
Okay, here we have Evan in Columbus. You're on the air. Welcome, Evan.
Hey there, this is Evan Rogers. I was calling to, it seemed to be more and more relevant to the conversation as I was listening for this long period of time. I was going to talk about, the origins of the Tea Party, because I was right there on the ground floor donating money to the leading candidates. It was Ron Paul who basically started all this with the December 7th money bomb and the December 16th money bomb to remind everyone about the Tea Party. But going further, we're talking about moderation and, you know, quote unquote, selling out. I think it was Paul who mentioned that, many of the Tea Party members don't want to compromise and maybe they're going to stick to their guns. And my opinion was what I wanted to say was that that's sort of framing the rhetoric in the wrong way. Of course, somebody might not sell it might not want to compromise if compromise is against their principles. Many people want really low taxes, and yet if the compromise is raising taxes 1%, then whatever is the other side of that compromise can't be made. If the right to gun ownership is uncompromisable to you, then any sort of change about gun ownership can't be compromised at all. It's not that they're not willing to compromise. That compromise would render them completely you know, impossible.
Well, now you say you're a former Tea Party member. Why former?
Oh, right. Well, as I said, this is another intriguing point that I was going to talk about. I didn't know if it was okay, but yeah, exactly. I started off with Ron Paul. I remember him debating Rudy Giuliani, and I think it was South Carolina. And then we started calling ourselves Tea Party members because mm-hmm. that's sort of the way it went. And unfortunately, I started reading more and more about economics, or actually fortunately for me, but fortunately for me, I started reading more about Austrian economics, and it just started realizing that government can't solve the problems that we have. And I drifted more towards libertarianism with a lot of people.
Okay.
The people who weren't willing to give up the yoke of saying that taxes are bad, those are the people who stayed in the Tea Party. And then, if I'm not mistaken, Karl Rove and many other high-ranking Republicans sort of came in and started funding quote-unquote Tea Party things. And actually, most of the people today who are Ron Paul supporters and more the minarchy section, they're the individuals who were able to identify the selling out of the principles and the fact that, I'm sort of rambling at this point. Go ahead.
Nope, that's okay. Evan, thanks for your call. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Neil, let's wrap up the segment with you, though, in response to that. Is Evan somebody that you're going to bring back to the Republican Party? It sounds like if they're not happy with the Tea Party, they're going to go elsewhere, libertarian or whatever.
I think our party, the Republican Party, needs to reach out to everyone, women, kids, those that are 18 to 25-year-olds. We need to reach out to everyone the same way that Ronald Reagan opened his arms to everyone. Republicans, Democrats, and independents.
Well, speaking of Ronald Reagan, there's that the old saying, you know, the Ronald Reagan rule, don't speak ill of
right.
another Republican.
Right.
How much has that contributed to the problem?
Well, it's contributed a lot to the problem, but you too were at the State House in the 80s after Ronald Reagan was elected, and you could feel the enthusiasm of both sides. It wasn't people just standing around complaining. What we've done through this process of term limits is that we've made it easy for me to attack you as my party. Just look at when I post on Facebook what I get attacked on from my own party for having a particular position on things. It's as if you can insult anyone for any reason. And by the time they spend their time to recover from that assault, too much time has passed by. And what has to happen here is that people need to realize that they have to stay strong with their principles, but also fight back against those that make them be put into position to be silent. No person should ever be silenced, not the Tea Party, not the libertarians. We should all have debate, but you can't control the invite. You can't control the room. It's not fair.
Neil Clark, president of Grant Street Consultants, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Paul Beck, you'll stay with us. And then coming up, Tom Zawistowski, executive director of the Portage County Tea Party, will continue our conversation about what's a moderate Republican and how they fit into the Republican future. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. This hour, we're talking about the role of moderate Republicans in the future of the Republican Party and American politics. Still with us is Paul Beck, a retired political scientist at OSU. And joining us now by phone is Tom Zawistowski. He's executive director of the Portage County Tea Party. Welcome back to the show, Tom.
Ann, good to be with you. And Professor Beck, glad to be with you as well.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Columbia University political scientist John Huber, in a recent Washington Post column, blamed moderate Republicans for their own downfall. He said too many of them caved to extreme pressures within their party instead of exercising their procedural rights to force a more centrist outcome in the House. And we were just talking with Neil Clark, Tom Zawistowski, about what the moderate Republicans' responsibility was in all of this. What do you make of that? Do you think that they didn't fight back enough and that they should have? Were you up for the fight?
Well, you know, Ann, that's a good question, and I've been thinking about this topic since you invited me to come on the show. You know, I think the moderate Republican is kind of like the middle-class American. They don't seem to exist anymore. You know, what we find is that there really is a liberal wing of the Republican Party and a conservative wing, and that's really where the fault lines lie. Because when you say moderate, you know, what does that really mean? When the Tea Party was pushing for, you know, not to pass the CR, and the president, you know, basically
the continuing resolution,
resolution. You know, what were we talking about? We were saying, listen, we'll fund the entire government, but this Obamacare is a problem. You know, it's a disaster. It's not ready, and we even got to the point where we said, okay, if you don't want to fix it right now, delay it. Well, we were criticized. We were called all these names, you know, and we were terrible people, and Ted Cruz is a terrible guy. Now, where are we 2 months later? Well, we're right is where we are. The Tea Party was right. The Tea Party was telling the truth. So what's not moderate about the truth?
Paul Beck, what about that? I mean, do you see the Republican Party as polarized in that way, liberal and conservative Republicans? Or is there a silent majority of moderate Republicans out there?
Yeah, I guess I really don't see it in terms of polarization between liberal Republicans and conservative Republicans. Most of the people we would classify in the past as liberal Republicans are gone. That group is not really in the Congress anymore. If you look issue by issue at public opinion and separate people who are Tea Party supporters and Republicans from those who are Republicans but not Tea Party supporters, there are big differences issue by issue in how conservative they are. The Tea Party supporters typically are at the extreme of the continuum. Pure, maybe the way to put it. The people who are not Tea Party supporters tend that in that direction. They favor, let's say, less government spending, but they aren't willing to go quite as far in cutting it as some of the steadfast Tea Party people are. Now, that's a real division, and it goes across all issues except foreign policy, except defense spending. But in terms of domestic issues, both social legislation and economic legislation, there is that divide within the party.
Tom Zawatowski, what about the idea of compromise? So legislator A wants 4, legislator B wants 1, they compromise on 2.5. Is that gone?
Well, and I get asked that question all the time. And the problem is, what's left to compromise? I mean, you get to a point where you've got $17 trillion deficits, where you've got a government that hasn't had a budget in 4 years, that this continuing resolution process is simply a dodge of their responsibilities. With these continuing resolutions, there's no congressional oversight. There's no appropriations going on. You really just don't have any government at all. So when they say you want to compromise, you know, where is that? You know, the president says you can't change the Obamacare law. It's the law of the land. You know, you can't change it. Well, first of all, the Constitution says the Congress can change it. Second of all, the Constitution says the president can't. But literally within days of him saying that, he gave unions an exemption just by a wave of his presidential hand that's illegal. I don't call that compromise. I call that bullying. I call that not following the law. And I'm very concerned, and I think a lot of Tea Party people are concerned about this lawless nature of what's going on in Washington.
The idea of the continuing resolution, Paul Beck, and the way government runs and as it's running right now, that didn't come with the Tea Partiers.
No, it goes back a long time. I wanted to come back to a point Tom made earlier, and it was a very valid point, and that is that if you take a position at one extreme of an issue continuum, and I don't use extreme in a pejorative way, but you're all the way to one side on an issue, the idea of compromise is much more difficult for you than it is for somebody who says, well, you know, I have some sentiment in that direction, but I don't go all the way to the extreme. I can see government programs that are good programs, and I want to preserve that. And so they're much more willing to compromise than somebody who is taking an adamant position at the end. And that's, I think, the difference between what we would call the moderate Republicans and the Tea Party Republicans. And again, as I said before, it turns up in poll after poll after poll as you go across various issues that people who are supportive of the Tea Party movement, a dwindling percentage, but still a substantial percentage, people who are supportive of the Tea Party movement are really the ones who are at the adamant side of any particular issue.
Well, Anne, I'd like to add to
that. Go ahead, Tom.
Because I think that, you know, there's a couple things at play here. One is that when you say extreme positions, and I agree, the professor wasn't being pejorative. He was just saying that, you're kind of set in your ways. You know, there are certain principles of American life that are just factual. There is no compromise. In other words, in my life, I spend what I make. That's the way my life works. In my life, in my business that I've had for 25 years, my credit rating is not based on how much I borrow, but how much I save, okay? And so when people say, you know, you want to compromise on things like the debt ceiling, the problem is it's not compromise, it's avoiding the responsibility of looking at the issues, which are the entitlement programs that everyone knows, every government agency is projecting, are going to explode if we don't address them. But they never address them. That's all we're saying. How's that extreme that I want people to actually do their job?
You mean talk about these issues?
I mean solve these issues. Talk is cheap. In my world, I don't get to talk. In my world, I either make the sale or I don't. I either hire that employee
but
or I don't.
But in your world, it's not a democracy.
In
or
our
a Democratic
world, we're not a
Republican.
Either.
I imagine
we're
it's
a representative republic.
Right.
Okay. But the fact is that you still have a job to do. And that job is to manage the business of the American people.
Do you think there is a place for the moderate Republicans in the GOP today?
I really don't.
Let's hear from Dick in Westerville. You think that there is a place for moderate Republicans and that the base will grow. Hi, Dick. You're on the air.
I'm glad we're getting thank you for letting me on.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a place for a moderate Republican. Right now, I think he is a endangered species on the most extremely endangered species around.
But not quite a fossil.
Not quite a fossil.
Okay.
And even if he is something of a fossil, I think we can pull a Jurassic Park on him.
Okay.
And I dearly hope we do. There, the moderate Republican not only reads his own literature, he reads other people's literature. He sees things. Sir, Mr. Laskowski.
Zawistowski,
you say
there,
Tom.
Let me finish, please. Mm-hmm. There is a middle class out there. We are alive and well. We just are poorly organized. As to a compromise on the...
the budget.
Mm-hmm. The budget is getting better. You may not want to believe it, but because of a congressional... What is it? The budget
sequestration.
Office. Say again?
Sequestration.
No. The people in the arm of Congress that does money things.
The Congressional Budget Office is what you're referring
right.
to.
They say that if we continue at the present rate, we will become, first off, budget positive. I've heard a Tea Party person say, we haven't had a balanced budget in 30 years. There's a problem with that. Some of us remember that we had not only a balanced budget, but a positive budget. In other words, we had the income exceeding the outgo for the federal government.
Okay.
And it will be a lot shorter than 30 years. It was like 13 years ago.
Okay.
But we were helped out of that.
All right.
As to the Obamacare, I have not heard of a Republican alternative. And in fact, most of Obamacare was taken out of Republican principles from the Newt Gingrich era. So that's my opinion. I think the moderate Republican can be brought back into existence, and I think it's a wonderful thing. And I'm old enough to have actually lived under Nelson Rockefeller's world.
Okay. Dick, thank you so much. Tom Zawistowski, you said there isn't a role for them. Dick in Westerville said there is, and they're coming back. Paul Beck, do you think it'll take a Jurassic solution to bring them back?
Well, the fact of the matter is that the Republicans can't win elections without moderate Republicans. And so they've got to be able to appeal to them as well as to the Tea Party people. And that's a problem. They certainly can't win presidential elections that way. The other point that I wanted to make is that I think Tom and the caller to some degree raise an interesting point about entitlement programs. Entitlement programs were not part of the discussion when we had the government shutdown and the debate over the debt ceiling. Now, they may lie in the background, but nobody seems to be willing to say, well, okay, we need to cut Social Security or we need to cut Medicare. And that's true, I think, of Tea Party candidates as well as Democrats.
Tom Zawatowski, we have an email from Matthew in Columbus, and I want to direct it to you. He says the extreme positions on social issues such as women's rights taken by the Tea Party have alienated everybody I know in my generation, millennials, from not only the Tea Party but the Republican Party by association. I have no issues with the fiscal policies the GOP/Tea Party stand behind, but the social issues seem to drive elections. What about that? The Tea Party seemed to be more fiscally oriented at the outset. It has come to be identified with a lot of social conservative issues. Do you feel, is that how you describe it, or would you see it somewhat differently?
Well, we do view it differently, and I've had a lot of questions from the media about this. The problem that we've run into is, though our focus was, you know, originally taxed enough already, you know, and fiscal issues like the budget and the deficit and things of that nature, what we're starting to understand is that what ails our nation is really values, is really integrity. It's having the President of the United States get on your TV and lie to your face, and having Governor Kasich, you know, lie to your face. What we're finding is that as we get deeper and deeper into our political process, the corruption is rampant. And I mean that sincerely. And so we're concerned about, you know, that it's not just fiscal issues now, that if we're going to be a representative republic, because you can't have someone represent you if they're a liar, if you can't trust them, you need people with good values. And so now we're getting drawn more into some of the social issues because we're trying to protect those social institutions that really play a key role in balancing the power of government and really keeping our nation on this right track. So, you know, when they push us and say, well, we're against women's rights and we're against gay rights and all that, I think part of the problem is that we don't get a lot of opportunity to explain our position. Just like the gentleman said, there's no health care plan from the Republicans. That's just a falsehood, flat out. There's multiple plans for Republicans. Just go look it up on the internet. They've had no opportunity to put that forward. And I think the other part that Dr. Beck said, one of the things we have to understand is, look at what's going on in Ohio. Right now in Ohio, there's approximately 8 million registered voters. Only 20% of them are registered as Republicans or Democrats. About 8% are Republicans, are Democrats, and 12% are Republicans. 79.6% of every person in this state that's registered to vote is an independent. You know why? Because they don't like what either party's selling. And either party is, quote unquote, party, and I use that in quotes because they're not political parties, they're election machines. They're not trying to improve the election process. They're trying to control access. They're trying to say you can vote for anybody you want as long as it's the people we choose for you. And that's why the governor and the Republicans attacked the Green Party and the Libertarians and the Constitution Party last week with House Bill or Senate Bill 193, where they're basically trying to keep them off the ballot. We have a real problem with just being access to the ballot.
Paul Beck, is the middle that big in Ohio, and where do you see it going from here?
Well, the middle is not that big. It's an artifact of how we define party in Ohio, or how people are identified with parties, and that is that they're people who vote in the party primaries. There are many more people who would be independents by that measure who would call themselves Democrats or Republicans.
Tom Zawatowski, time is up. As usual, it flew by. Thank you so much for joining us today, though.
Well, thanks for having me on, and really enjoyed the conversation. It's a great topic.
And political scientist, OSU political scientist Paul Beck, thanks for joining us again.
Good to be here, Ann.
And thanks to everybody for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.